educate everybody to be honest.
We've
got to do better than that.
In fact, Froy, if you thought it was worthwhile and you wanted to, I think our colleagues are working in Guadalajara, will be back in a month or two, and you could ask them to come and tell you what they've been doing, because it's been a very interesting learning experience for them, and I've been working with them, and they have learned a lot. And obviously, we're all learning. This is a learning process. It's a learning by doing process that we're involved here, and it seems to me that that's the best way for that education to take place.
And ICLED is a work in progress.
Yes.
So you're listening to Sperio on WMVR Cambridge, and we have just a few minutes left. We've been talking with ICLED, the International Consortium for Law and Development, and right now I'm going to have some. Read some announcements for you. So today, right after our program, from 7 to 9 p.m. at Blackstone Community Center in Boston South End, there's going to be a critical breakdown, a program called Critical Breakdown, which is a multicultural youth organizing project of the American Friends Service Committee. And it's going to have spoken word, hip-hop, etc. And again, it's at Blackstone Community Center, Boston South End. Also on Friday, there's going to be something called Riverside Theater Works for Zili fans, and it's at Hyde Park, Boston. It's at it's just a music show.
They're super cool.
And on Saturday,
that's today, Friday.
Yeah, that's today. And then on Saturday, there's going to be a program called Youth Truth, also sponsored by Critical Breakdown, at the Blackstone Community Center. Well, there'll be workshops for youth on spoken word, graph writing, breaking, and street theater. And on Sunday, there's going to be a program celebrating Women's History Month from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Cambridge Cultural Center. And it's going to be a Muslim word bazaar to honor South Asian women and cultures. That's the last announcement I have for you. It was great hearing from ICLED today. If you want to learn more about them, you can go to their website, which is
ICLED-law.org.
Yeah, so
thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. I want to remind
you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for coming.
We'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT.
Troubadour. It's blues, bluegrass, and vintage folk. It's 1950s country and rhythm and blues. Troubadour plays roots music without bounds or barriers. Thursday, 2 to 4 p.m. at WMBR, Cambridge.
Save your doggone soul. Kai e hele anae.
welcome all of Cambridge and other people listening out in the world, here and there, in other spiritual planes. Welcome all to Music for Humans. I'm a Dr. Jalis Sakran, and I welcome you. We have with us today, fortunately, Professor Levine.
It's good to be here.
Welcome, Professor. Professor Levine, who is neither proud nor ashamed to be a professor of Jewish mysticism.
That's right. I just am, and I'm content.
It's wonderful, Professor. We also have, I believe, through the glass, Ivan the Mellow. Ivan, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Здравствуйте, господа присяжные.
There seems to be a large barrier here, so perhaps blocking the transmission. So we will have an engineer analyze this, and we will continue. We also have a returning guest, a guest host, Aurora, a vocal, now, is it specialist or therapist?
I specialize in vocal therapy.
And do you... Right, that's the only way that works. You don't therapize vocal specialty.
Well, it depends on a case-by-case basis. Each human is not defined only by one title. At any rate, I say to you, welcome back.
Thank you for that, Aurora. We also have with us a new host who has been following the show for some time and who we're very honored to have, who is very well known in the study of penguins and other similar avian species. This is David Talbot. David, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, David. Now, you specialize in penguins in particular. What drew you to the penguin?
Their agility.
Their quickness of wing and foot.
Yes.
It's very interesting. Now, I think as we all have, dreamt of being a penguin, and also have eaten penguin.
I find the trumpeting of the penguin to be incredibly confident considering their inability to break the barrier between land and sky.
To actually break the barrier.
Yes, I find in the cases of larger birds, it's not so much of a fluid motion as a struggle. A struggle with the ground, a struggle to be in the air and free.
But I think we can all agree that the penguin is not nearly as pathetic as the ostrich.
The ostrich, of course, who really tries very hard to break the barrier, as you so eloquently put it, but obviously fails quite comically.
Now, Dr. Talbot, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the latest theory is that penguins are the evolutionary ancestor of the dinosaurs.
Yes. That's why they're still on the southern hemisphere continent.
So you mean that they escaped the demise of the dinosaur?
Yes, because the meteors were mostly towards the north.
Now, I have also heard that most modern birds are descendants, evolutionarily, of the dinosaurs, which I guess would mean that penguins are the great, great ancestors of all the other birds.
Yes, and they're the most stable form because all of the dinosaurs returned eventually to their penguin shape, more or less.
You mean when they died?
Yes.
And the penguin, of course, is one of the more elegant creatures as well.
In what sense do you say that, Dr. Jawless?
Well, in the sense that they wear an outfit that, or their coloring is such that even we humans or certain groups of the humans will imitate it, whereas the ostrich again, for example, is imitated by none and reviled by all.
I've always found these animals that have changed their mode of transportation to be quite fascinating. For example, all life forms, of course, could once swim. Humans, of course, started with gills, and our arms were once fins. But we left the water. We became mammals. And the whale is an example of a mammal who decided to go back into the water. It's a pretty rare example.
And I've always wondered, when looking at whales, whether or not at any time in their evolution that they may have smoked.
Due to their blowhole, perhaps they evolved an ability to release the toxins from within?
It's perhaps... our engineer is indicating that perhaps Ivan the Mellow is now able to connect with us. Ivan, are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Здравствуйте, господа. I am enchanted by your conversation about whales. Frankly, I'm myself a pandeman.
You a pandeman?
That's correct.
Is that like a condiment, like ketchup?
A panda, as in...
Oh, like the, again, the... Well, that's actually an excellent correlation then, that the coloring is very similar, of course, to the panda as well, the panda and the penguin.
Right, I think a panda is like a penguin who's been given a black eye. Maybe been in a fight.
Are there any penguin species that are also, when they are struck in the eye, that they have a circular bruising?
In Siberia, you can find the great black eye penguin.
It's a Siberian species.
It's a species that can only be found in Siberia, as well as a part of Alaska.
Now, speaking of the evolutionary history of all these animals, I've always been a very strong advocate of the idea that as human beings, we need to go to our evolutionary past and learn from it. I believe that the beginning of the fall of mankind began with the invention of agriculture. And that if we are to succeed as humans, we need to go back to a foraging society, to be hunters and gatherers again.
That this would cure some of the ills that we have. So, in particular, I recently was told that I would experience spiritual health if I grew my own food.
Right. It would certainly be better, spiritually speaking, than buying food. But I believe the ultimate goal would be to forage your own food rather than planting it, which is an unnatural act.
Well, it's a simulated rape of the earth.
That's right.
That's planting in of the seed, yeah, against its will.
It's a disruption of the natural
forcibly
circle.
Forcing open the ground with a metal tool and inserting the seed to extract the fruit.
I find that agriculture is not so much a rape as an embracing of the food, because if you look at how many animals interact with food, you have a symbiotic relationship, for example, with the dodo, which involved the dodo eating a part of this tree and excreting, and it was beautiful.
Well, let's see if we can bring some external voices. As our listeners know, the The show is really about connecting. So if you'd like to connect with us, the number is 617-253-8810. Hello, caller. You are on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Hi. I have some comments about this thing about advocating you turning to a hunter-gatherer society, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, the advantage that we have over a hunter-gatherer society, or at least one of them, is that we have specialized roles. We have, I mean, extremely specialized roles.
I don't see how bread factors into this.
What? Say it again?
I don't quite understand why bread factors into a hunter-gatherer versus agricultural society.
I didn't say anything about bread. I said we have specialized roles. Okay, I mean highly specialized roles, right?
Like, I think what Aurora is indicating is there, we still have, like, a baker would have specialized roles, but generally speaking, like, a practitioner of transdermal mediation, such as myself.
I didn't say anything about that. What I mean to say is that the development of specialized roles enables people to spend their whole lives doing, or if they choose to, doing one particular thing, which in a hunter-gatherer society you couldn't do.
Well,
so the thing is that every time you've read a book, a really great life-changing book, every time that you've seen any great work of art, any great invention was created because the society allows you to spend your whole life working in one particular pursuit. Whereas a hunter-gatherer society, things are simple enough, are a whole lot simpler, and you can't. It's like a division of labor. We have a really specialized, you know, division of labor, which enables us to perfect certain arts and sciences.
I mean, it
leads to a certain amount of decadence, obviously, where people are creating crap their whole life. But it does enable us. Enable that degree of, I mean, it's like ants. You know, certain ants have really specialized tasks. You know, that they excel at. In this culture, we can do the same thing. And with a hunter-gatherer society, it would be like human beings would be.
Yeah. Well, caller, I think we understand it. So, like, again, back to the specialized roles that you mentioned. Like,
mm-hmm.
For some people. Like I, for instance, have tried to bake bread, and I found that the bread that I create is a little bit dense, and I don't like to eat my own bread. But so ultimately, I'm not a very good baker. However, I am a truly exceptional transdermal mediator. So I can.
Did you say transdermal?
Transdermal. So I have another person bake.
So
the,
what are you, a prostitute? That's pretty transdermal, isn't it?
Well, caller, I think in some sense we're all prostitutes. We're all exchanging.
Don't think so. I don't think we're all prostitutes.
I think we're all exchanging money for services, and so in some sense we are prostituting ourselves.
Well, I think one of the big questions, putting aside the question of whether specialized roles such as honey nut or 12-grain breads are really that important, the question is whether a life of pursuit of a specialized goal is really that important, whether that's a healthy relationship with the circle of life.
Everyone must do that. It's like, you know, mandatory, whatever, but this does. You know, there are certain advantages to living in a particular way versus living in another way. One of the great problems, I think, of this culture, or one of the great problems of, you know, traditional hunter-gatherer culture is that you're kind of stuck in this culture. The same way you'd be, like, stuck in a hunter-gatherer society. I mean, you're not totally, because there's always the option, you know, you do have the option to go out in the land and actually live that kind of lifestyle if you wish to, right?
Right, well, you can.
But, I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's, the choice to get specialized doesn't necessarily preclude the choice not to get specialized.
I believe the caller is alluding to the preachings of Adam Smith. Communist brethren brought up in the plains of Siberia a ghost at such preachings, frankly.
Well, let's bring another voice in. We have several callers waiting.
Oh, by the way, I have another topic I'd like to bring up.
Well, just a moment, caller.
Penguin shamanism, you know,
caller, please, let's bring that voice in. Caller two? Well, let's try again. Caller three? Caller three?
Hi, how are you?
Well, welcome to the air.
This is a little off the subject of the bread. I'd like to talk about the penguin again. I have a very sensational feeling towards the penguin, and kind of like a relaxing, chemistry. Very peaceful animal that, you know, people hunt down and sort of rape them in a manner and package them up in sardine cans. I'm very against that, you know.
The cruel treatment of the penguin.
Yes, yes.
Now, caller one, are you still with us? Oh, unfortunately, it seems... caller one? It seems we've lost our original caller. Let's see. Caller two. Caller two?
Yes, yes.
I find this a very interesting topic. Many people lament the cruelty done to penguins, and very few people lament the cruelty done to beans.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, caller one.
Hi,
welcome back.
I thought you hung up on me. Okay,
No. We have two lines.
What you asked me?
Only that, now, you brought up penguin shamanism.
Yes.
Now, you referred to penguins specifically casting paganistic spells, or the reverse, that humans using the penguin in their witchcraft.
Well, I mean, you know, you can engage in both, but there's actually a video you can see on YouTube. Werner Herzog made a documentary called "Some Encounters at the Edge of the End of the World" or "Edge of the World" or something like that. But he made this. There's this one YouTube clip that has from it on it, in which there's this penguin who goes off into the mountains for no apparent, you know, purpose, where there's no food, basically like doomed to die, and someone mentioned in the clips it was probably a penguin shaman, and then maybe this was, I don't know, maybe it's an initiation for a penguin shaman to go out into the wilderness without food and test themselves and come back stronger and perhaps in touch with their spirit.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I've heard stuff like that too, and to keep it PG, I heard, you know, they kind of take the head and sort of put it on their head, sort of like Halloween, so to speak. And, I don't know. I mean, I know they might think completely different about it, but to me, the penguin's a very peaceful, natural animal, or mammal, I should say, that, you know, thrives on peace.
Well, let's see if we can bring Mr. Talbot in on this again. Now, Mr. Talbot, in your exposure to penguins, have you ever been exposed to penguins that with a predilection for the occult?
Sometimes, but...
So it does occasionally happen?
Yes, but it's not often widely reported on.
Yeah, but it's fortunate that our caller was aware of this. So I personally was not aware that that there was penguin shamanism.
I find
I find the penguin to be one of the more perverse animals in the animal kingdom. They've forsaken flight and adopted swimming, which is sort of an interesting metaphor for taking what perhaps would be your natural environment and deciding that you want to do something different. And
wait, how do you know the penguins can't fly when there are no humans around? You know, maybe they're just very good at disguising the fact that they can fly.
This is actually very interesting because, speaking of both YouTube and flying, and people, there was recently a nice man from the BBC that discovered that penguins can fly, in fact, but it is just a very closely guarded secret.
Now, the BBC is notorious for spreading misinformation. I am not sure how many of you are old enough to remember the spaghetti tree debacle of the 60s. Where the BBC claimed that in that year there was an excellent spaghetti crop, and they showed films of Italian peasants gathering the spaghetti from the trees and speaking about the difficulty of breeding trees that yield spaghetti strands of the same length. So, unfortunately, it was intended as comical, but many of the viewers did not realize this, and it remains a myth to this day among the, particularly among Britons, that spaghetti grows on trees.
Oh, wow, I never knew that one.
Yeah, I think the BBC also had a defamatory news report that claimed that penguins had a very high incidence of certain STDs.
Yes, that I heard too, yes, that is very true.
How did they disprove that?
I believe they tested it, and it turns out that STDs were not contracted after lovemaking with the penguins.
So did the researchers actually have sex with the penguins to determine this?
I think I don't think we need to speculate on the particulars. It's the show is intended to be family oriented.
Right.
But caller two, now you mentioned the that penguin is eaten a lot, and this is affecting the population.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Now I of course have sampled penguin, but it was in one of my wanderings when I found myself very, very far to the south, and it was one of the few things that I could find to eat.
Right.
But are there cultures? Is penguin eaten? For example,
there are cultures on it, but for the most part, what happens is the sailors, they cast a big, big net, and these nets are supposedly, like fish safe, so to speak, and they only capture tuna. But that's not true because, you know, these penguins are much bigger animals, and a lot of times they get mixed up, you know, with the tuna. And, you know, there's no one there to say, hey, you know, let that penguin go, there's no authority, because, you know, these are all private businesses, and, they put it in the, you know, they mix it up with the tuna.
And of course, the sea law is very, very complicated.
Yep.
I wonder what effect that has on our psyche if we're eating, we're eating tuna and we're eating penguin.
Right.
And what does that do spiritually?
Well, I think it'd be a very good thing if you actually managed to eat a penguin shaman. You could perhaps, gain some of their powers.
Well, that's possible. I'm not going to deny that. Maybe some sort of metaphor will come through that. But I never really experienced eating a penguin that had a shaman, cast some sort of spell, so to speak. Not too sure about that, but
and it's not really often a concern when one is, for instance, when one goes to McDonald's and eats a hamburger with meat from 1,000 cows.
If
there are bovine shamans, then we've all almost certainly eaten them.
Yeah.
I find it particularly interesting because patients of mine that eat more canned tuna or more McDonald's burgers, their voices and their spiritual voices seem more muddled, and I believe that's because the echoes and the reverberations of past lives within their stomachs are coming out. And that does strange things to the stomach.
Yeah. Mentally, too, yeah. physically and mentally, yeah.
No,
go ahead, Connor.
Oh, and another aspect of penguins living in the South Pole is that, you know, is that there are near, like, as I wonder, like, what sort of ability they have to sort of tune into the Earth's geomagnetic field. I mean, that's something that they must have. Well, I mean, you know, they've been living there for millions of years, that they can, tap into that or exploit it in some way, you know.
Well, that's interesting. We know that the Earth is... The Earth is oscillating as we speak, of course. It's vibrating, I think, at 440 megahertz.
You know?
And some of us, like Dr. Jalas, I know, is able to actually pick up these reverberations and harmonize them with his soul. And it's an interesting question whether penguins, being on the South Pole, can do the same thing and can harmonize their bodies with the Earth's oscillations.
Yeah, that's a quite interesting fact. They can, hear up to miles away. You know, they communicate through the echoes of the ocean, and that's quite amazing. Just to add to the fact, you know.
And I'm not sure if penguins do this. I apologize to everyone. I'm woefully ignorant on penguins, particularly. But I wonder if they, excuse me, if they will slap the water, so to speak, to communicate across long distances.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not entirely sure if this is true for penguins, but I believe that they can smell meat up to 300 miles. But that may be the bear that I'm thinking of.
So does that include 300 miles upwards?
Or maybe it was 300 kilometers. I think they use the metric system.
Yeah, but kilometers sounds a little more accurate.
And I also wonder if this is through the Earth, like a straight line, or is it a great circle?
That is interesting, too.
Well, I find that smells transverse better through the air than through the ground. It is quite the opposite of
right.
Sounds. I find it's better to analyze sounds as they can reverberate through the Earth itself, and you can feel the Earth.
Now, Aurora, do you believe that sounds are a more basic element of human perception than smell? Because I've heard it claimed that smell is the most primitive and reptilian part of human sensation.
Well, if you look at the formation of the human being, in the beginning, you don't begin with smells, you begin with sound. The first sounds that you hear are the murmuring of your mother, the sloshing of her amniotic fluid around you, and the vibration of her blood and the pumping of her heart. And those are sounds which stay with you.
Actually, for me, it's the murmuring of my stomach. So I've been salivating here quietly and just pondering on the delicious nature of penguins.
Yeah. Penguin is also a force to be reckoned with.
You mean like physically?
Physically, yes.
Is Collar One still with us? Yes, I sense that we had lost the Collar One's vibrations. It's Collar Four. Is there a Collar Four on the air? No Collar Four.
No, I don't think so.
It's just us and Collar Three.
Yeah. I haven't brought up a good point of what he just said. I feel bad that the penguin sometimes gets eaten, but I never physically known, to myself that here I am eating a penguin. And if I had, I wish I would know the effects, because when it's in a can, I mean, you don't know what you're getting, you know. I'm not a professional as to say, okay, this is what penguin looks like, and this is what tuna fish looks like. Oh, this is what it tastes like, you know.
Well, it tastes exactly like chicken, so...
On the plus side, consuming other creatures allows them to be a part of our bodies and of our souls.
Right.
And so that consumption can enhance your spirituality.
Yeah. Physically, too. I mean, I know that if you eat fish, the oils in them are good for your joints, actually, in your body. I wish I could know what it would be like mentally, because, you know, I never actually sat down and said, okay, I'm eating, you know, a penguin.
Well,
so
the flippers actually have an aphrodisiac quality.
Right.
Let's try to bring another voice in on this. Caller 6, welcome to the air.
Yes. I have been monitoring the movement of the penguins, and I think this is possibly a great threat that they could be coming up across our southern oceanic border. And you've all heard of their ability to march, long marches.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that visitor in the studio tonight, whether he's part of their advanced team. And, you know, are they among us already?
You're referring to Mr. Talbot?
Yes.
Well, in appearance, he certainly, I can say, appears somewhat penguin-like. But only slightly. David, perhaps you'd care to comment on this?
Any similarity in appearance is purely coincidental. And perhaps it's just been because I've been around them so long.
It doesn't help that you're wearing a tuxedo.
No. But it does allow me to get closer to them before their guards catch me.
Do you find that they hold a great attention to appearances?
You mean, do they recognize people?
No, are they vain?
I think they are vain creatures.
Certainly. It would explain a lot about their appearance.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to approach them wearing nothing but a t-shirt and shorts?
Well, because, again, like our listeners, you have to remember they cannot see us. David here is accustomed to wearing a tuxedo constantly.
Okay.
Which is, I know it seems unusual, but he is an unusual man.
Mm-hmm.
So, David, have you ever tried approaching them in less formal dress?
Yes, but they always get up and leave right away. They don't like people that don't look like them. They're very xenophobic.
And certainly understandable. I mean, but to our eyes, there is every penguin is identical. But I'm certain to the discerning eye, every penguin is unique.
They all sort of have the same dress code, you know.
Yes, a very black tie.
Right.
The caller did bring up an excellent point with respect to illegal immigration of penguins.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very poignant subject.
Well, I wonder whether we had stopped too soon with our wall we're building on the southern border. I would continue it right into the Gulf of Mexico on one side and to the Pacific on the other side. Or they could be approaching us from either coast. And you know how they say radio waves travel around the Earth for years, and sometimes the ancient radio programs have been heard again. And I'm wondering if this happens to the cries of animals, and whether really there are the sounds of other sea creatures that have been circulating in the oceans.
Interesting. So, like, sort of
a
radio ghosting effect that might occur that makes the sounds that we produce continue to be produced for thousands of years to come.
Well, I'm very concerned about, for instance, you know, the slaughter of another creature, much like the penguin, the harp seal. And I'm wondering if this might be the cause that has made the penguins march on us in the north.
Right.
So do you believe the penguins are on the side of the harp seals, or that they are contributing to the slaughter?
No, I think they are standing up for their fellow flippered creatures.
Well, there's always a certain food chain that happens in the water. I'm sure one out of, 10 must be probably getting victimized to another sea creature.
I've always thought the most profound animal in the animal kingdom was the duck.
Yeah.
See, penguins, they gave up their ability to fly and they exchanged it for swimming instead. Whales gave up their ability to walk and they exchanged it for swimming. Ducks, on the other hand, exhibit swimming, walking, and flying.
And diving. They can dive. You've heard of divers.
Diving, yeah.
Actually, in my recent studies in South America, I did take several weeks to observe the ducks. And they are quite excellent divers. They also are very, very moody. So perhaps their goodwill was exchanged for all of these abilities.
Yeah, their body is built for it, so to speak.
Well, such a privileged species, you can hardly blame them for being somewhat contemptuous.
And I've heard they even are starting to compete against humans in diving competitions.
Hmm. They are very peaceful animals. I've hand-fed them plenty of times.
Yes, they're peaceful when they're being hand-fed.
Yeah.
When you try to open negotiations for a sort of land-water divide, they become very cranky.
Yeah, they become very violent. I think there's a certain sense in the air where, if you're by yourself, individual, they feel that you're in harmony. I believe, they treat you with the same respect that you give them. And, if you're with a group of people that you don't know, chances are that person is, the opposite of harmony. And I'm sure they sense it. But I agree with you. If you open up certain negotiations with them, it could be a bad outcome.
It's all about the proper approach that that certain creature will have a difficulty accepting you if you don't. Like the penguin. You approach it in a dress that it regards as overly informal. It regards it as an affront against its dress. It sees you as an outsider, a stranger.
Yeah.
Cannot understand you, can't identify with you, and rejects you.
Right.
And I understand that the attack of the penguin is very, very fierce.
Yes.
What exactly does an attacking penguin do?
They lunge beak first at the person.
Yeah.
And launch themselves up to 100 miles per hour.
They're very powerful.
Like a cannon, really. A penguin cannon.
Yeah.
Or a spear.
And a spear
cannon, yes.
And
actually quite the same together.
They're,
very explosive when they come at you.
And you amass, the penguin, of course, is like the human and unlike the coyote, a very social animal, and hence would generally enjoys being around many, many penguins all at once. And so if you aggravate one, chances are you've aggravated them all and they will attack you simultaneously.
It's sort of a tribe, right?
Precisely, and so you have a volley.
Right.
On a somewhat related question, I've heard that as the penguin sits on its egg, a camel will sit on a human to kill it if it is aggravated. Is that true, Dr. Jollis?
It is true in my experience, although otherwise the camel is very peaceful, so I wonder if perhaps the camel imagines that it is assisting the human in gestating.
That was exactly where my question was leading.
That the camel is unable to distinguish between the person and the egg. And
I'm not against camels, but I'd like to actually have a shiny mule. And what that is you have a donkey, and my grandfather back in the old times, he had one. Treated it very nicely. Always poured water on it when it was hot. you know, fed it and had it drink water, and it was a very pleasurable and peaceful animal. I never experienced the camel. I've seen them, but I'm just comparing it to the mule, and the mule is a very, very peaceful animal, as well as the penguin. But if you upset them, if you have bad attentions towards them, they sense it, and you know they can once again be explosive. You know, I think it all depends how you approach it and what your intentions are, because they can read certain things in the air, so to speak. You know,
malicious intents.
Yes, malicious intents, exactly.
Especially during the mating season.
Mating season, yeah, you got to be careful. They're very protective. All animals are.
So now, speaking of this relationship, this harmonious relationship between man and an animal, and turning back to the most wretched of all animals, the ostrich, I've read some recent studies which have shown that ostriches, when farmed in captivity, will not mate with one another.
Oh, I never knew that.
And at first this puzzled the pastoralists. They had no idea why the ostriches refused to mate on these farms. And then they discovered that the root cause of this failure to mate was that the ostriches were irresistibly attracted to the humans. And once they had experienced this attraction to mankind, they refused to mate with one another.
Oh, wow.
Well, let's bring one of these humans in to discuss this with us. Caller 9, welcome to the air.
Mulibonte.
Welcome, Mr. Beam.
Really great program tonight.
Well, it could only be greater by having you present.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Beam, it is our privilege to ask you if you have any experience with the penguin.
Yeah, no, I've never had the chance to meet one. Although, I just started growing worms, and we got a big bin, sort of a big Tupperware container, and some shredded documents, and, you know, some fuel for the worms, and we put them in there and had a chance to just commune with them for a bit, and then...
Yeah, I mean, speaking...
The next morning, you know, it was just the opposite. Woke up and walked into the kitchen, and there were two worms that had crawled through the air holes and onto just the desert floor that is the kitchen. And they were just, you know, they were there, all shriveled up, barely moving.
It's a tragedy. I was about to say that, you know, really speaking of society and social animals, you have a bucket of worms, and really that's a glorious hierarchy there.
Yeah. Yeah, it represents a lot of what's going on in our society right now, because we're having all these economic problems, and people are unhappy.
Yeah.
People are losing a lot of money, and yet, you know, it's just one of the most well-off, spoiled generations in our history, right? We have so many different things to be thankful for, and yet everybody's so unhappy.
I agree. The worm is such a small creature. It's easy to, you know, not look upon it, you know, because it's so much larger in scale.
Yeah, with the worms, it's the same idea, because the Tupperware container just full of fuel, just full of, you know, avocado peels and rotten salad.
Right.
And still, you know, they climb through the shredded paper and out the air holes.
Right.
And onto just the flat expanse of tile.
Right.
Where they meet their demise.
Yeah.
I personally find worms somewhat puzzling, as they don't have any vocal expressions. I have no way to understand their minds or...
Aurora, of course, only able to identify with creatures that express themselves with sound.
Right.
Yeah, you want to be careful. You don't want to draw the conclusion that you can't connect with them because they don't have vocal expression. You know, those two things are not interchangeable. But it's definitely harder. It's definitely harder.
They have a lot of physical, sort of, not the same as vocal, but a lot of times they explain themselves through physical movement.
Right, they vibrate.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And
you can tell, you know, they also communicate with level of, like, shrivel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can tell how they're dying.
Sad, yeah. But, and in some sort of way, we are all dying, but not, you know, moving on to another experience. Dying, I don't like using that term, but I understand what you're saying. Dying to me is sort of like that's it, the end, nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the same goes for the worms. I believe we're all going to experience another plane.
My preference is to take it as the earlier caller mentioned, that after we die, we continue to echo around the earth like a wave.
Yes, like a wave, yeah.
Like a radio program.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way I think of it is you go on to live in everybody's mind, just every different thing you've touched in a good way or bad across the whole earth, across all time in your existence, it's still there. It's the wave that keeps propagating down the generations.
And just like the dolphin, and they speak as echoes through the water and the ocean. And
yeah, it's just like that.
Yeah. I wonder if the wave, because I know if you study one particular wave, it travels for miles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that's how they speak, if it's through the wave, or is it directly underneath the ocean and goes through sort of like a signal.
That's it's very interesting. It reminds me of a dream I once had. I was attending a sporting event in a stadium, and I started the wave. And the wave went around the stadium, and it came back, and it kept going around and around, and it kept going. And I got tired of the sporting event, but I just sat there, and I enjoyed watching the wave going around endlessly around the stadium that I had begun.
It was a cycle. Right.
And you felt at the moment like the great progenitor of a large and vast family.
Of a new life form, essentially.
Before we leave, I'd like to mention that my travels are continuing in a few days. I will be going to the north, possibly across the great vast waves that is the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, well.
And Aurora here is, alas, only passing through.
Aurora, when you're down there, when you visualize the wave, visualize an echo through the wave, and see if you see anything, if you contact the show, because I listen to the show every Friday. I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
I will definitely concentrate.
I would appreciate that. If you could remember, I know there's a lot of things going on, you know. But
well, unfortunately, callers and our listeners, as Aurora mentions, our time is coming to an end.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling, callers.
Bolibanji.
And Masalama, Arthur.
Namaste.
Well, and thank you, hosts. Thank you, Mr. Talbot.
Thank you.
And Aurora.
Always, thanks are in order.
Ivan the Mellow.
Thank you.
And Professor Levine.
It was my pleasure to be here.
Thank you again. I'm Addictor Jalis Sakran. Music for Humans is on every Friday at 7 p.m. We are New Age Talk Radio here on WMBR 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'a salama. Thank you.
Four points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safe.